Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Danger Room, the X-Men Comics Commentary Podcast. My name's Adam.
And my name is Jeremy.
B-Sides, we're here to do B-Sides.
The ever popular question mark B-Sides?
I don't know. Maybe.
Or maybe more aptly called, what else is happening in the mutant universe of Marvel?
It seemed like they were popular when between X-Men 65 and X-Men 94.
Right. I mean, that's
a lot of people were unaware that the X-Men were doing stuff then.
Yeah, I included. But we got some Excalibur and some X-Force and some other things to cover. So let's just jump into Excalibur.
Excalibur number 48. Toward the Future, says the cover.
Yeah, it's wow. Well, at the end, I've got to cycle back here. Hang on, I'm not prepared, Adam. I'm just not prepared.
It's all right, cover where everybody's kind of standing on, looks like some sort of cliffside. There's water splashing up on it. They're all looking in a direction
off to the right, which is toward the future.
Except Megan is kind of looking slightly above where everyone else is looking. I guess Rachel's looking there too, and Kitty looks peeved, but nobody else looks peeved.
Yeah,
she kind of looks halfway between peeved and not peeved.
I feel like Alan Davis is going for like an attitude with Nightcrawler. I don't know what it is.
Which is, he doesn't have to do that. It's a cover, but it's kind of nice that he does.
So now if they were facing towards the left, then they would be looking towards the past. But this is Excalibur, and the past is the past. We're heading towards the future, everybody. TechNet's wrapped up. Who are those other people?
Which other people?
I don't know. The crazy gang. They're all wrapped up.
I never remember the difference between the crazy gang was a long time ago, right? TechNet recently.
Yeah. TechNet is the gang with the group that was debuted in the prestige format Excalibur special edition, right? Or was that the crazy gang?
I think that was TechNet.
Okay. All right. Well, anyways.
But neither of us are going to go back and look, so.
I just remember the character designs. I just can't remember what they're called. You got that big lady with a jewel on her forehead.
The crazy gang was in at least a few, because the crazy gang created Widget, and that was in the first issue, wasn't it?
Yes.
So I'm going to say the TechNet was in the prestige special, like you said, and crazy gang was in issue one.
Let's roll with it.
Okay.
Love it.
I don't know if it's true or not, but sticking to it.
Also, there's some waves crashing in on the background. You got like a sunrise, maybe? Let's go with a sunrise, probably, if they're looking toward the future. It wouldn't be a sunset. It's like
the world's on fire.
Well, it could be that. The world's on fire or a sunrise. You pick.
They're pretty relaxed for the world being on fire.
Megan certainly is. She's like posing for her glamour shot there.
Rachel's posing too.
Yeah, but
I mean, they're all kind of posing.
Yeah, but
Rachel's legs. It seems like a sort of pose.
This is definitely, and I hate to criticize Alan Davis, it's not his best work. It's good, but it's not great.
I don't think women stand like that.
No.
Standing. She's also wearing her old hound outfit.
Yes, which I think
kind of strange.
Well, it ties into this issue a little bit. It also, to me, it sort of feels like each one of these character designs was done at a different time. So maybe he started with Captain Britain and got, you know, watched some TV and then came back and did Megan. And I feel like maybe Rachel and Nightcrawler were done at the same time. And then he finished it off when he got into a fight with his significant other with Kitty. I'm angry.
Could be.
Anyways.
Kitty looking in a different direction as well than everybody else. So really there's three different directions here. We've spent too much time on this cover.
We have. It's, again, it really does seem like maybe three different drawing sessions and he just didn't really care. He's like, I don't know, toward the future.
Like, I mean, you know, the future's in all the directions. So
that's true.
Towards the future.
So we open it up and we're going to start our story in Ireland, County Sligo.
Which is the same place where we left off last month where the box was in the ground.
Right.
Somewhere else, though.
I had actually forgotten all about the last issue and how it ended. And, of course, I didn't go back to look at it. So I just started this issue and I was like, huh, okay, there's a box. It's in the ground.
There is some sort of church, I guess, with some monks. Monastery, I guess. That's where monks live, right?
Yeah, it's, yeah, yep, we'll go with that. And there's a guy here reading a passage, is a young man reading a passage, and then, or maybe it's the older guy. I don't know which one it is. But the point here is that there's a young man named Farron who is to become the Anti-Phoenix, or is waiting the rise of the Anti-Phoenix.
Yes.
To
he doesn't mention anything about the Anti-Phoenix here, but yes, he is waiting for the rise of the Anti-Phoenix so that he can call the Phoenix, and he is currently floating.
Right.
When his feet, he's wearing, it should be noted, he's also wearing socks. Mm-hmm. But when his feet touch the ground, the earth, that is, the Phoenix will answer his summons, in theory.
Right. So an Anti-Phoenix will rise. His mutant power, I guess, is, and he says somewhere in here, like when his naked feet touch the ground.
Oh, he does mention the Anti-Phoenix. Yeah. Last of 1,000 generations charged as the sentinels to await the rise of the Anti-Phoenix.
But not the sentinels, just they are sentinels. Human yeah. sentinels.
Yeah.
Protecting against the Phoenix. It was ordained in the instant his naked feet touched the earth, he'll inherit the full powers of the first person, he who has survived the great deluge, and then the Phoenix will answer my summons. So he is, or at least according to this religion or prophecies or what have you, destined to become the Phoenix so that he can wield that power to take on the Anti-Phoenix. That's the prologue-ish here.
It's a good thing the Phoenix is on Earth, because I can't imagine waiting for the Phoenix. It would just take a while.
Adam, is the Phoenix on Earth?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
We'll go through it. I got a little confused, but...
I think so.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
So that's... it's very confusing. Because, I've never been 100% sure on... Rachel Summers's powers.
You know, I might be getting this confused with this month's What If, because that also involves the Phoenix.
Oh my gosh.
So
you should just try to purge that What If issue from your mind.
Well, we got to cover it.
We will.
I don't want to purge it until after we cover it.
So the older guy here is like, is that time upon us? And he says, yes, the air is charged with evil. This is Farron speaking. The storm is gathering. And in the background, a jet flies across the sky. And we move to where this box is or whatever, where Kitty is and some, I think, WHO's people. Or
I feel like Farron sounds like this.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a very sprightly fellow.
Soft-spoken, sprightly, absolutely.
Air is charged with evil force. The storm is gathering.
He definitely has an air of himself that is above everything else, because he's waiting for this moment, and that's all he's ever been waiting for.
Short distance beyond the monastery's crumbling cloisters.
So the plane flies by and everybody's panicking, and Kitty's like, that's Excalibur. They make dramatic entrances and people jump out of the plane. We've got Rachel and Megan. Rachel is not flying. She's on the arms of Megan. We've got a weird lady. I don't remember who that is.
Can Megan fly when she's next to Rachel?
Megan can fly, period.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. In other words, Rachel is not flying of her own accord.
Well, maybe she is, and she's just...
She's not.
Okay.
100%, because we're going to, as we go through the story, well, spoilers, we're just going to learn that she doesn't have the Phoenix Force right now.
That's right, she's blocking the Phoenix Force. Like, she, this goes back a couple issues where she was traveling with Megan to find Megan's parentage, and she discovered that family that was innocent, and she realized that she was blocking herself. So she's been blocking the Phoenix Force.
Right. So she's not in costume. She's not flying. I would guess Yeah, we know we'll find this out in a couple pages. About the only power she has left is telepathy. That's about it. It seems like.
I don't feel like she's. I think she's just like she still has access to it if she wants to.
Potentially, but again, when we get to the page where stuff happens, I don't know. It's weird, and we can try to decipher what's happening. Anyways, who's the lady? Who's the lady?
That's the lady who showed up at the end of the last issue, because I don't know if the world was ending or something.
Does she get a name drop? Because I feel like she doesn't get a name drop at all in this issue.
She might not get a name drop in this issue, but let's see what the internet has to say.
While you look that up, the
Cerise.
Cerise, okay. I think she does actually get a name drop somewhere in here. Captain Britain is holding on to Kylan, and Kylan's like, whoa, I would have rather stayed with Nightcrawler. And he's like, don't worry about us or him. He's got to land the plane. I'll protect you. We'll land just fine because Kylan cannot fly. And we're also, well, I wasn't, but until the end of the issue, we don't really know what his powers are.
Yes.
And we'll find them out.
As a magical sword mm-hmm. that doesn't slice through good people.
Right. I
mean, he has a certain set of fighting skills.
And the issue here is called Irish Stew. It's written and penciled by Alan Davis. There must have been something that happened to Alan Davis's family, or he is just dedicating this issue to his father, J.J. Davis, for his inspiration. So that's a nice touch.
Maybe his dad was like, hey, you should do a story about a box that contains the Anti-Phoenix. And he was like, that's a great idea, Dad.
I'm going to dedicate this issue to you. It's very possible.
Yeah.
I did no research on who J.J. Davis is. It could be his brother. No, he says it's to his dad. So we know that much.
Dad.
Unless he's lying to us, then it might not be his dad.
That's a possibility, too.
Mark Farmer's inking. Michael Heisler is lettering. Glynis Oliver is the colorist. Harry Kavanaugh is the editor. Tom DeFalco is the editor-in-chief. By the way, Adam, Excalibur was created by Chris Claremont and Alan Davis.
Really? I didn't know that.
Well, it's right there in black and white. So they all show up. Kitty's like, hey, there's a box super far down there. It looks like there's somebody in it. And I was like, oh, my God. Is it Magneto? Remember when he was stuck in a box at the center of the Earth?
No.
You don't remember that?
That was a long time ago.
I know it was a long time ago. And that is absolutely not what's happening here. But I always like to make those little connections like, oh, are we retconning something? Is this going to tie into something? But it doesn't.
It would turn out that Magneto, none of the stuff that happened with Magneto was the real Magneto.
Yeah, it was a Magneto bot created by Doom.
I think we've had those before.
Exactly, right? Why not have some more?
I tried to phase down to the chamber, but I can't see to navigate through solid gold. I got lost. Solid gold. Through solid matter. Where did I get gold from?
Well, the way that solid is penciled, I could see how you could read that as gold.
Oh, that's interesting.
But Alistair tried to get a hold of some machinery, but he ran into a bureaucratic brick wall. And it turns out somebody wants to... If they excavate all the way down there, then they want to put it as garbage. And so then there was some bureaucracy. So they're not going to do that. Nightcrawler teleports in and scares Rachel, which is strange.
Alistair.
Is that Alistair? Oh, okay. You're right. It is.
Hello, Kurt. We're all just a bit jumpy. I understand. Rachel relayed your conversation to me via our mind link.
So she still has mind link powers.
Telepathy. Yep.
There is no point to further discussion. The solution of the mystery lies within the crypt. Nightcrawler takes charge.
Kitty and Rachel can phase down to reconnoiter while Captain Britain and Megan and Cerise begin to dig a tunnel to the chamber.
We better hurry. Once the rain starts, the place will become a mud bath.
Yeah, there's never really been an official leader of Excalibur. They all just kind of do things. And Nightcrawler had some recent success with TechNet guys, so he's like, well, I will step up. And so plan has been relayed, which is fine. Better to have a plan than no plan, so good on him. Kitty and Rachel phase through the ground, and Kitty's like, why don't you just use like the Phoenix Force and just dig a hole, and why aren't you in costume and all these things? And
I can't get that thing on without using the Phoenix Force. It has no zippers.
Which is interesting. They've never really talked about how Rachel puts her costume on, but we've absolutely seen her go from plain clothes to a Phoenix costume. So that's neat.
Be serious. I am, kiddo. I've willed this Phoenix Force to be dormant. I discovered that using it was what was preventing my fragmented memory from healing. What can you remember? I mean, has it worked?
This is a little weird for me because I didn't realize that Rachel had memory issues.
But we discussed it in a previous issue.
I'm sure we did.
It was probably...
Didn't stick with me.
A month ago.
Yeah.
So I can forgive you for not remembering.
But anyways, that's what's going on there. So they keep phasing down and they pop through into the box.
Unless a serious threat arises, I'm relying on my natural telepathy and telekinesis. Okay. She has telepathy and telekinesis.
So in theory, she could have levitated herself down with Megan. And maybe she was, but no power signature was around that panel.
Yeah.
Anyways, they show up and Rachel's like, well, I can't sense a psychic presence. And Kitty falls to the ground. She turns Kitty over and it is an older Kate.
Yeah.
And she says, Kitty? And somebody off panel says, she's dead, Rachel. Leave her.
And it's, we never actually say who it is, but it's Franklin Richards. She must say it's Frank somewhere.
I don't think she says Franklin or Frank anywhere in this issue, but Scrapper, I believe, was his nickname from way back when in X-Men 141 to 142.
Well, we're in Days of Future Past. Yep. FYI, if you hadn't figured it out, this is Franklin Richards. We're back in the future. We went back to the future, to the Days of Future Past. And there's some Sentinels flying by. They're hiding. Kate's dead. Rachel.
She's like, this can't be. This is my future. It's my past. How did I get back here? And he's like, you never left. The time travel attempt didn't work, and the effort killed Kate.
No, I went back in time. I met the X-Men, my mother and father, and Excalibur. You had some freaky hallucinations when you psi-linked with Kate. They get attacked. Well, who is this? Is this...
Storm?
Is it Storm?
Yeah.
She's colored orange in my limited.
Well, I'm reading the original scans here, and her little mutant suit is colored green.
Yeah, okay.
So she's a prisoner, just like most of the other mutants there in her mutant uniform.
Well, she's attacking a Sentinel right in front of Rachel and Franklin. Come on, snap out of it, Rachel. Your friends need you. Pull yourself together. Really help them. Release the Phoenix Force. The Sentinel kills Storm, presumably.
Just very similar to the way it did in Days of Future Past. A spike through her chest, and then it electrifies and smushes Colossus, and they're just zapping and killing and shooting, and Franklin's like, help them, release the Phoenix Force and help us, and she's like, I can't, and he's like, do it for your friends, they're dying!
She's like, but I don't have the Phoenix Force in this timeline, I took it in the past!
Which is...
Get your record straight!
Yeah, which is interesting, because she did not have powers like this in Days of Future Past, although we only see her for like an issue or two, so it could go either way. When she finally goes back in time, I feel like she just has the Phoenix Force or elements of it.
You know, my memory is so bad that I don't know. Yeah. Wasn't she a hound when she first went back?
There's flashbacks to her being a hound, but when she first appears...
Let's see, who was chasing her? Mojo?
Oh my god, that's Excalibur. You gotta go way further back than that.
We're going way, way back. I can't go back that far. My brain doesn't work that way.
Yeah, like somewhere in the 170s, 180s is when she reappears. Reappears. Hell, it could even be the 160s. But either way, she reappears and she's just like, well, here I am.
Well, it's canon now. She didn't have the Phoenix Force in Days of Future Past. She took it on in the past.
Which is fine. I don't recall there ever being like the issue where she's like, now I have the Phoenix Force. What's that?
Was Jean Grey dead at the time?
Yes.
When she was like, hey, spawn of Jean Grey, I'm totally on board.
Right. But I think if that is how it happened off panel. Again, it's fine.
At any rate, she is now in a different spot. And I don't remember what issue of Uncanny X-Men, but it's the one where she's about to kill. She's dressed up as a maid and she's or not a maid, but one of the Hellfire ladies. And she's about to kill Celine, and Wolverine is standing behind her and he eggs her on. Go ahead, girl, kill her.
All right. So I'm gonna play a little game here. I normally get these things, as has been pointed out in communiques, emails and whatnot, I tend to get these things wrong. But I believe, I'm probably going to get this wrong, I believe that this was X-Men 207.
I wish I had the email open so that I could verify that you're not guessing the one that somebody said you always guess.
Yeah, that's like X-Men 248 or 251 or 252 that was pointed out. X-Men 207 totally nailed it.
Really?
Totally nailed it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a cover. Wolverine's like slashing downward. That probably doesn't help at all, but anyways.
One where Wolverine slashes downward.
I mean, if you looked at the cover, you'd be like, yep, that is absolutely Wolverine slashing downward. It's like he's cutting the cover with his claws, which obviously is not the first time or last time that that's happened.
I'm going to look it up. 207. Let's see. Come on. Load there, Mr. Internet. Oh, yeah. He's slashing through the comic cover itself.
Yeah. Anyways, that's the events that we're seeing right now are of that issue.
Well, wait. I don't see that Celine is in this issue.
Just keep scrolling down.
Let's see. Oh, there she is. Black Queen Celine.
I know you wanted me to be wrong, but I'm right.
No, I didn't want you. Just didn't see the thing at first. So I just wanted to, you know, hold you accountable.
No problem. So there you go, folks that write in and say Jeremy's always wrong. I was right once. Here it was.
We're keeping track from here on out.
Yeah, that'll be our new game. And I guess take
guesses do not count.
Yeah, moving forward. I guess you get to take a drink maybe if I'm wrong, because I think I err more on the wrong side than the right side. But we'll see. We'll start keeping track. Anyways, Wolverine is standing here and he's like, do it, kill her. And she's like, wait, no, I remember this and you told me that it was wrong to do this. And, you know, it turns out you were right. I shouldn't kill her. And he's like, nah, sometimes people got to die. So use your Phoenix Force and kill her.
Didn't Wolverine say something like, if you kill her, I'm going to kill you?
He doesn't say exactly that, but I mean, he says like you can't just kill her for revenge. We're the good guys. We got to be better than that. Blah, blah, blah.
It's the X-Men don't murder.
Right. And so she's like, she's going to do it. And before she's able to do it, he pops his claws into her gut and she falls to the ground. And then she goes on to the body shop and all that stuff.
Okay, so Rachel said the only thing that you can do to stop me from killing her is to kill me.
Right.
And Wolverine started approaching her.
Right.
And so then it ended on a snicked.
Yep.
And then it cut to 208.
Correct.
Okay. Vaguely remembering this.
I've read those issues so many times. They're some of my favorites.
And Wolverine did not kill Rachel.
Here? Well, he attempted to. Then. Yeah, he's like, I will stop you, and he does. But when 208 opens, she's like, oh, I used my telekinesis just in time to close up these wounds, but I'm losing blood fast. And then she goes on.
Here, he just pops his claws and says,
he's like, I'm going to kill you. And she's like,
you got to kill, your life could depend on it. And she says, if you were going to kill me, you'd have done it by now. This whole charade was intended to trick me into reactivating the Phoenix Force. But why? Who are you? And Wolverine changes into a voidless or a formless void of a person. And then it turns into kind of an anti-Phoenix, if you will.
Hmm.
It's like a Phoenix, but without the red.
I am the rightful host to the Phoenix. Give me that phoenix.
Forgive my deceptions. When I sensed the phoenix was trapped within you, I assumed you had evil intent. Now I understand. And his face is very friendly right now. Mm-hmm. Your mind was too fragile to contain the majesty of the phoenix. Relinquish it to me and your memory will be instantly restored. So he knows that she has memory problems. Mm-hmm. Brian said that Roma had engineered everything that happened to Excalibur. So we're still dealing with that, mm-hmm. Including my encounter with despair. Is that where she got her phoenix powers? Something to do with despair? I remember Cyclops and despair, and maybe Phoenix was there. I guess she must have been.
I don't know.
What if she was that? To prepare us for a major confrontation. Could this be it? Yes, it could. It read my mind. You are nothing without the phoenix. Nothing but a helpless pawn. But within you is the power to be a player. Relinquish the phoenix to me. Never! I may not know what's going on, but there is no way I'll give you what you want. Oh, but you will. Events are unfolding that will force you to call on the phoenix, and when you do, I will tear it from your puny mind. So I guess if she does call the phoenix, he's going to usurp it, is the threat.
Yes.
So she's still holding it back, and we cut to the outside where whose powers are these? Is this cube? Or is this? Oh, it's okay. Cerise created a tunnel that is excavating out dirt. And okay, Megan is back to her original form, maybe? Or she's some sort of a mole? She kind of looks like Kylan, but she also looks like Rain. Could she just do this now?
Yeah, I mean, she's a shapeshifter, so she's just turned into like a mole human, and both her and Captain Britain are digging. Cerise, I don't know what she's doing. Maybe she's excavating the dirt.
So every time they dig dirt, the dirt goes up through a tube, and in the top panel comes out behind Nightcrawler.
Oh my gosh, I said Cerise and Siri chimed in.
Oh, that's funny.
Stupid phone always listening to everything.
What do you need to know about Nightcrawler?
So I was looking up, the appearance of Despair in X-Men. This one I would never have called or guessed, so this does not account for the game. but that was X-Men 144, so just a couple of issues after Days of Future Past. But I don't see Rachel as a character in that issue. That's not to say that Despair's not in multiple issues of X-Men, but I really have very little memory of Despair in the pages of the X-Men. But when you started talking about stuff, it triggered a memory.
A memory of?
Despair. But like I said, I couldn't tell you, I couldn't even incorrectly guess as to what issue Despair has been in for X-Men.
248.
Always 248.
Nightcrawler is standing by, and he feels bad because he lost connection with Kitty and Rachel. And he is not able to do anything, and he feels like he's already questioning his leadership. I was overconfident.
Well, that's a sign of a good leader, is one that can question their decisions.
Not to the point that Nightcrawler does it. That's like one of his characteristics, is that anytime he leads, he feels like he's not making the right choices.
That's true. That's true. It's the burden of leadership.
Characteristics.
Meanwhile, nearby, the monastery folk see kind of what's happening.
The monks are lowering. They take the socks off of, what was his name, Theron?
Theron, yep.
And lower his feet to the ground, and there's a big and a cracoom.
This seems to just kick up like a storm.
Storm shows up. It's unnatural. It's like a living thing. Says, I don't know, Alistair maybe?
Right.
So much evil is concentrated above us. I sense Necrom's hand in this, says Kailun, because we don't want to forget about Necrom.
Yeah, he's a bad guy. Megan and Captain Britain are breaking through. Megan says, Brian! And that's when the Phoenix Force, I guess, erupts. Or is this the Anti-Phoenix? Power erupts from the hole.
But the Anti-Phoenix appears very similar to the Phoenix Force.
Right.
Except instead of a bird inside of all the fire, there's a little man, and there's and it's red instead of, or it's yellow instead of red.
Right. So this must be anti-Phoenix that bursts out, and they show up with Kitty and Rachel, and Rachel's like, "We're okay. Get after that thing. Don't let it escape. We've got to stop it."
And it's heading straight towards Pharaon, and I, Pharaon, call on the Cosmic Phoenix and implore its aid to extinguish this evil.
This thing is like, "You're wasting your time, spawn of Pharaon." So I think Pharaon must be a surname. The Phoenix is bound to a puny human.
Puny human.
You do not possess the power to hold me.
Who says puny human in Star Trek?
Is it Q? It's got to be Worf.
Is it Worf?
Or any other Klingon. It's probably any Klingon.
Is it? It's not the Ferengi. Okay.
It'd have to be either Worf or like one of the, like Galron or any other. Those are the only two Klingons I'm going to be able to come up with at this moment.
Puny human. Okay. You do not possess the power to hold me. Then we will help, says Captain Britain, showing up at a crucial moment.
Wait, is it the Nausicaans? Who are the creatures that stab Captain Picard through the heart?
When he's young?
When he's young. Are those Nausicaans?
I don't know.
I think those might... Well, those are the ones that are like, "Play Dom Jot, human."
I haven't watched that episode in quite a while. Nausicaan sounds correct.
Yeah, it's the Nausicaan. I think those are the guys that say puny human. Human.
Maybe I'm thinking of it from somewhere else, too.
Maybe. Just
puny human rings a bell. Does Hulk say puny human?
Oh, probably.
Is that what I'm thinking of?
I just Googled Nausicaan, and one of the images is of, I think, a custom Nausicaan stabbing a custom Captain Picard through the gut.
Like a... action figure?
Yeah.
But
I think these were like custom made Playmates action figures. I don't think they actually created these.
You know, I have my Playmates Star Trek action figure still in on card, and it's, you know, they're not worth anything.
I was gonna say, I don't think those are worth anything.
But I was like, these are gonna be worth something someday. I'm going to keep him on card because I've got the collector's gene in me now.
Yeah, that's what happens.
And so I have Locutus of Borg on card, and I have Data, perhaps Picard. And now I have Worf. I think that's it.
If it was me, and it is not, it is you, I would probably get rid of all of those except for Locutus, because that's kind of a cool figure. Unless you really like Data and Picard, then just keep them all.
Well, I bought the characters I liked. Plus, I probably bought Locutus because he's cool.
Yeah.
And because I thought it would be worth something.
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
If anything was going to be worth something, it would be that one.
I hear you, brother.
But these are not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, also by Playmates, and so they're not worth anything.
Nope, they are not.
I don't know if just nobody bought them, or maybe they made so many of them, or just nobody cares.
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I know my uncle has a box full of carded, they're not in great condition, but carded Playmates Next Generation figures. He's like, "These are going to be worth something." I'm like, "I don't think so, but you know, throw them on eBay, see what happens." And I think he remains to have a box full of them.
They created new ones. They're not as good as the old ones. Like, I see them on the shelf at Target, and I'm like, "Ew, those don't look nice."
I try to stay out of the toy aisle these days because...
Probably smart.
Yeah. Every now and then I'll go down the Lego aisle just because there's a lot of cool Lego sets. But those are expensive enough that I don't really have an urge to buy them.
Yeah. Those are pretty expensive. Especially, like, Legos that go out of print go up very rapidly.
Yeah, I have a, I don't want to say original, but a very early, probably 1997, 1998 Millennium Falcon. I have the box, I have like all the stuff. It's not shrink wrapped, like I built the set and whatnot. So, but I have all of the pieces, all of the paperwork and the box. And every now and then I look at it and I'm like, maybe I should like part this all out, like make sure I have, you know, grab all the pieces, rebuild it, take some pictures, tear it all down, and then sell it. And I'm like, yeah, it just seems like a lot of work.
There is a Millennium Falcon Lego selling on Amazon for $850. I don't know if that's because it's out of print and maybe it's the same one you're talking about, or if it's a new one that's just worth $850. But I was looking at Lego AT-ATs because I love the AT-AT design.
Yep.
Also was $850. And I was like, well, that's out of my price range.
Yeah, there's easily, I don't know, 10, 12 Millennium Falcon Lego sets. I'd have to dig into it and find like the little product number, but the $850 one sounds like the, like there was a really big one kind of advanced that they made. Sounds like it's probably that one.
So not the one you have?
Probably not, but I'd have to go get that number and figure it out. But again, it's all a lot of work. It's in the basement.
Yeah, if it's worth $850, you should probably sell it.
That's a good point.
Keep it for another 50 years and then sell it for $950.
That's basically what that math would work out to be. Well, anyways.
Anti-Phoenix has the power to create rock monsters out of the earth.
Rock creatures specifically.
Rock creatures, rock monsters. Come on. They don't look like humans.
That's
true.
They're
like monsters.
Maybe rock monsters like to be referred to as rock creatures. Do you ever think about that, Adam?
It's not rock lobsters.
That's true. It is not rock lobsters.
Nobody asked them if they wanted to be called rock creatures.
That's true. Megan just makes that assumption.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, they fight.
Defend yourself, Megan, says Cerise. What about that poor boy? I'll look after him, says Brian. And he smashes through a rock and there's a gigantic skrakow noise, and that'll come back later.
That's true. It will.
Skrakow.
Actually, all of these noises are going to come. And there's a lot of them. Splorch, flop, yep. Plop, bok, zam, splot. Not all of them will come back, but a lot of them will come back.
I feel like they all come back.
They might. They
Did
might.
Did you compare?
I didn't. No.
I feel like they're here on purpose.
Oh, they absolutely are, because there'll be a whole sequence that... Certainly
there wouldn't be this many sound effects.
Yeah.
The bits are reforming. Keep the stuff away from the boy. It's trying to encase him. And they do so, but it does manage to encase Pharaon in, I don't know, liquid rock, it looks like.
Yeah.
Liquid granite, I suppose. I don't know.
Malleable rock.
It's gray, but it's coming from the earth, so who knows. Perhaps it will die if it's blasted far enough apart, says Cerise, blasting it far enough apart with a flazam, but there's a splot. But Kailun comes in and says, no! Physical attack on the earth and rock is futile. It is merely the medium used by disembodied demonic force to gain physical effect. The enchanted swords of Zizura can dissipate the motivating force, and then these fiendish creatures will be rock and mud. Once more, and he slices up a bunch of rock creatures and rescues Pharaon from his liquid rock imprisonment. And I guess his swords also have that power. So these are some pretty awesome swords.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that everything's taken care of.
Yeah.
So this rock is mud.
And, Brian says, you've obviously had experience with this sort of thing before, Kailun. And he says, occasionally, in a beat that I feel like would be hilarious in a movie.
Right.
Giving inanimate matter the semblance of life was just one of the devilish feats the tyrant Necrom used to enslave my world. Your concern, says Pharaon, should be for this world. The Anti-Phoenix has escaped. And Rachel shows up and she says, Pharaon says, you are not worthy of the Phoenix.
The monk guy is like, Pharaon, your outburst shames us. And they talk through, like, Pharaon's been waiting for this, preparing for his whole life, and it turns out, like, he's not the host, so this is a momentous day. Unless you can find and destroy the Anti-Phoenix before it joins with its creator, it may become unstoppable. So the monk guy's like, please take Pharaon with you, his mystic ability will benefit your cause. And without really any debate, I think maybe it's Nightcrawler? Might be Brian says, alright, let's go! Maybe this Rachel. I think it's Rachel.
The lighthouse, the tracking devices there will be able to detect the Anti-Phoenix. It has the same energy signature as the Phoenix Force. And there's a little bit of talk about what happened to the Blackbird, which I don't remember any of this.
There's some filler pages here, it feels like, but
well, we're learning about Kylo Ren's powers.
So I do remember Kurt took the Blackbird flew it somewhere, and it must have been stolen off panel, or there's a tickle in my memory that somebody else is like, huh, what's the Blackbird doing here? I'll take it. But I don't recall who or where that would have occurred.
Isn't there an episode of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., where Wolverine and Nick Fury steal a ship? Is that a bird?
Maybe.
I don't know.
But we could go back. I mean, you know, a diligent podcaster would have taken all these notes and would know this answer, but
we're not that podcast.
Not as us.
Made clear in over 300 episodes.
Just a lot of speculation. Oh, yeah, that happened. I forgot about that.
I mean, you have to take it for the word of the comic. It's probably not lying.
No, I'm sure it happened somewhere. Could have been off panel, but I feel like we covered it. I just don't remember. But anyways.
Kitty points out that the aircraft they have is one of the captured from the Vixen's henchmen. And I don't know what she's talking about, but I got to believe it's true.
I don't know who the Vixens are.
Huh. Yeah, I feel like I kind of think I know who they are, but I really don't. I'm not even going to take a stab at it.
Nope. That's
how insecure I am about actually knowing.
I'm going to assume, remember when Kitty went to the girls' school?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to assume that those girls she hung out with, those were the Vixens.
And they had henchmen and they had a spaceship? Okay.
You didn't see it, but yeah, that's absolutely what happened. Anyways,
ask Kai Lun what his powers are, and he says, well, it's kind of insignificant compared to your guys' powers. They're so great. And
Megan's like, I'd say you're super fast and agile or very strong. Kitty's like, maybe it's a healing factor. And he's like, no, really. Well, all right. I can precisely reproduce any sound.
Can you show us? How about that huge whack when Brian hit the rock creature? You mean Skrakow?
Then the rocks reformed. Splursh, elup, flop. And then Megan screamed and the rock creature thumped Brian. I can't tell what that says.
Eek-bock.
Yeah, eek-bock. And then Cersei blasted the creatures. Fzam! Everybody's just staring at him, mouth agape.
Hold on. Cersei?
Cerise? Whatever. Cersei. I don't care.
It's from Game of Thrones.
And that's what we're going to stop everything for? Kylan looks a little embarrassed. Everyone's just kind of staring at him. And then I don't feel like he's very supportive here. He's like, it's no wonder you need to carry swords.
And then he says he's joking.
I don't know.
He's like, your fighting skills are all the more impressive for their lack of mutant enhancement.
Again, I get what they're going for, but it just kind of feels like Brian's putting him down.
It's all in the looks on Kylan's face. At the first, he's like, hey, now. And then he got a big smile. Well, you know, as much as
he smiled.
It's like, okay, I'm glad you respect me, you doof.
And then Nightcrawler, who is flying the plane here, he's like, okay, we're approaching the lighthouse. And my God! And they look down and they see a big line of robots heading towards the lighthouse. And as they get closer, they realize that they are headless robots that are looking like Widget's body.
Lockheed shows up and he's really excited and is like, come on, guys, let's go this way. I mean, he doesn't say that, but Kitty says he's really excited. We better follow him. There's some sort of bizarre temporal activity that Cerise discovers. They head down into the lighthouse and the interdimensional train that I guess they were keeping in the lighthouse is completely gutted.
Yep.
And we see the new body of Widget. Which for some reason reminds me of Nimrod. I don't know why.
And Cerise says, I can detect a fourth dimensional pulse, but it's fluctuating wildly. So it's like you got Widget's new head and shoulders, but then everything else is, I don't know, of a different dimension. And then he's got little fingertips.
He's transparent. You can actually see Megan behind him.
Yeah. So I don't know if he's going. There's a body on the left and the right that's sort of off panel. I don't know if he's moving his top piece and his fingers over to those, or if he is sort of partially in our dimension and partially in another dimension.
He doesn't react to anybody, so I'm assuming he's traveling between dimensions. We'll probably find out next.
Yeah, exactly. Day. I mean, this is all we get here. Meanwhile, as they're
trance
checking that out, yeah, they realize that Rachel's in a trance, and the anti-Phoenix has found Necrom. Remember him?
Yeah.
And they've bonded together, and Rachel's like, we're too late. The Anti-Phoenix has joined with Necrom. I can feel it in my mind. He's coming after me.
I feel like Kylon should be in this panel.
Yes.
Because he would have a nice reaction shot.
Right.
Also, I noticed that Pharaon barely appears.
You wouldn't know he's there except for the one little headshot he has in the plane when they're gaping at Kylon's sound effects.
Yeah, he's like off in the corner.
Yeah, so.
And that's the only appearance he has. Like, did Alan Davis just forget he was along for the ride?
It would make more sense if it was Rachel, Kylon, Pharaon in the foreground, and maybe a couple of Excaliburs in the background as Rachel says the thing she says. And then you get those two people's reaction.
You should swap Alistair and Pharaon.
Right. Anyhow.
Should just be in the background in all these shots, but he's like distinctly missing.
Yeah.
Is he in the shot of them coming down the stairs? Okay, he's the second to last in the shot of them coming down the stairs, so he didn't completely forget about him.
Adam?
Yes.
What did you think of X-Force number 8?
Oh, boy. I thought that Rob Liefeld is officially done. He pencils, what, 2 pages of this book?
Yeah, 2 or 3.
And, I don't know. I thought the back half of it, where we learn about Cable, was pretty cool.
I actually, yeah. I thought it was pretty good. So, I mean, Rob Liefeld plots, I guess, I don't know what framing sequence art is, which that could just mean the first page and last page. Mike Mignola does the most lifting. And then you got a whole bunch of Bob Wiesek's guest inking. Fabian Nicizia, he's doing the script, so he knows what's going on. But, you know, we make a lot of fun of Rob Liefeld, his pacing, his layouts and everything like that. I feel like Mike Mignola, back in the day, I would have looked at this and been, I probably never read this because I probably opened it, read the first page, looked at this middle piece, and I was like, this art's terrible.
This is Rob Liefeld. I hate this. I hate it.
Yeah. And I probably thumbed through because as I was reading, it's like, I don't remember any of this. And I have this issue for sure because I bought them all until, you know, Image Comics was formed. And then you get the last page, which, so I probably just read the first page, last page, because really the middle section, I mean, it does tie into the events that are currently happening, but it's sort of a flashback, flash forward, you could argue as well.
It's a flashback. It's got Mike Mignola art, which is it's a very distinct style.
Yes.
And if you don't like his style, then you wouldn't probably like this. I like his style. I like the way that his art is sort of heavy on the blacks and then very, very little shading sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, it's
very distinct coloring.
I don't want to say it's simple because it's a stylistic choice. And he does not like Rob Liefeld and Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee. They do hash marks and all this shadowing and all this detail and whatnot. Whereas Mike Mignola?
Yes. I don't know.
Okay.
I think I heard an interview with him once.
He seems to be going more for, and we've discussed this sort of artwork before, but like sort of a 50s, I want to say Art Deco, but that's not right. Where you have just like outlines, but you can tell exactly what it is. I'm thinking more of like the lady who you just see sort of like the outlines of. Like
fashion art?
Fashion art, I think, is probably the right way to describe it. Anyways, point is, back in the day, I would have looked at this and I would have immediately compared this to some of Mike Mignola's X-Men annuals, which always felt like filler stories, and in my opinion back then, filler art. But when I read this, I was like, okay, you know what? I am actually sort of digging this style, and
it's a breath of fresh air from Rob Liefeld.
100%. Like, I can tell what's happening. I can tell where people are. I can tell where people are going. Pacing is right. Angles are right. Proportions are maybe not right, but stylistically, they're consistent.
The problem is, I could care less about whatever the wild pack.
Right. So the front portion of this, which I don't think we have to really cover, is like the wild pack is doing a mission for AIM to steal a thing from Hydra. But it turns out that it was like AIM just wanted to see how far Hydra was and some sort of a development. I'm pretty sure they're in the future. They are in the future because Cable makes a reference to something. I don't remember what it was. And no, Domino's like, "What's that, you old man?"
No, this is. I think this is the past.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. Could be. Maybe. I don't know. Doesn't really say.
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter.
No.
I could be either. But I'm assuming it's the past because of GW Bridge is on his team.
Right. That's a good point.
And
well, you never know. Like, is GW Bridge and Domino, are they time travelers as well? And maybe they. Baron von Strucker's here.
I get the impression that only Cable is a time traveler, because it doesn't seem like anybody knows that Cable is a time traveler.
Okay.
Spoilers, Cable's a time traveler.
Exactly.
There's a character named Grizzly. There's Domino. There's George Washington Bridge. There's Weapon X, who we met in issue 2 of X-Force. I don't know what his real name is. And then there's another character.
There's a... In the middle of the issue, actually towards the back half of the issue, after they've completed the mission and kind of did everything that I described there, everybody's separating and they're like, "Hey, you know, see you later. How will you get a hold of us for the next mission? You're just going to show up like you always do?" And Cable's like, "Yeah." And then they get this guy with the thumbs up. I really like this panel of the guy who's got the thumbs up. He's like, "Cool. We kicked the living baboobies out of everyone again, didn't we? Stay frosty, yeah. Cable."
That's some great Fabian Nicieza dialogue.
I don't care about the baboobies, but like, I really like the panel of this guy giving a thumbs up.
That's a good panel. That's Kane.
Is it Kane?
I found it. He is Weapon X in our current timeline, but back then he is Kane. And Kane refers to in that story that we saw of him as Cable is the old man who has trained him. Actually, everybody says that Cable trained all of them in this.
So then Cable takes off on his motorcycle. This reminded me of, do you remember Armageddon?
The movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
So after Armageddon, to me, is like a really great front half movie and a really terrible second half movie. But in the front half, they do this whole oil rig thing. There's a lot of action. They solve the oil rig thing, and they're done with whatever they're doing on the oil rig. And they all head out, and everybody goes their separate ways. And there's the sequence is very similar to this. And part of me wants to think that whoever wrote Armageddon read this and is like, "I'm going to do this in my Armageddon movie."
You think so?
No, I don't. But that's immediately what it reminded me of. And that was one of my favorite scenes of them getting done with whatever they're doing on the oil rig. And they like, we put up the rig and everything's great. All right, on to the next one. Let us know when you need us. And then they all just go their separate ways. And then later on, the government comes to collect them to send them up onto the asteroid. And that's when things get stupid. But before that, everything's great.
This is a long time ago, but I read an article about that scene in Armageddon that said that it was anti-environmentalist.
Sure, because oil's going everywhere and they're trying to like lock it all down. It's all just spewing into the ocean. And
isn't there a scene where Bruce Willis is like knocking golf balls into the ocean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. From the rig? Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was like the premise of the article was that the filmmakers were conservative and they were showing that they
just don't care.
They just don't like environmentalists.
Yeah.
They don't believe them.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Who knows if it was true.
It's been a long time since I've seen the movie, but there may have even been like a environmentalist sailboat that maybe Bruce Willis was hitting golf balls at. I don't remember, but maybe it was written by a bunch of conservatives. I don't know. When I watched that movie, that at least that first half, I looked at it as sort of a, because I mean, if you think about it, they have to save the Earth from this asteroid. So, I mean, there is a level of environmentalism of like just saving our lives. But I always just took it as like, this is just a super over the top bunch of people doing ridiculous things. Anyways,
I always just find people's interpretations of things to be interesting, whether or not they're actually accurate or not.
Right.
It's still pretty interesting.
I mean, we've definitely talked about Con Air in the past and how that just seems like it's a parody, even though it's played super straight. Some people watch that movie and they're like, this movie is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Other people watch it and they're like, I think this is a joke.
I don't think it's a joke, but I think it's dumb on purpose.
Right. Well, that's what I mean.
Well, I don't feel like it's – okay. So I think somewhere somebody definitely knows
right.
how dumb it is. But I don't know if it's the filmmaker.
That could be because it is played super straight.
Who is the filmmaker? Was that Michael Bay or was that Bruckheimer?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Because they don't typically make movies that are self-aware. So I feel like maybe the script was, or maybe some like Steve Buscemi knew.
It was directed by Simon West and written by Scott Rosenberg.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So
was it a Bruckheimer production?
Probably. It feels like there was a Bruckheimer logo at the beginning of it.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I feel like there's definitely a mixture of people who are in the know and people who weren't in the know.
I believe that you are correct. And for some reason, that's why it works. But anyways, that's a whole other conversation. Point here in this comic is that as Cable is driving his motorcycle away, he asks the professor to open up a time slide for him, and he motorcycles into a portal, and now he's talking to these robots who happen to be named Scott, Hank, and Jean.
So previously he had, in order to escape the dire situation, he used a body slide. And
they use a body slide in this as well, but they don't say professor do a body slide. He just says do a body slide. That's how they escape.
Yeah. Domino says, is this body slide all the time?
Yeah.
I do so love your funky toys, Nate.
Yeah.
So pointing out that she doesn't know that he's from the future.
Right.
I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. Everybody seems to have some memory issues here, like the robots here, the professor. Cable's asking him about some research, and he's like, are you sure? He's like, no, I'm not sure. There's big gaps in my memory.
How long it's, let's see. He's been gone for I've been gone for over 1,000 years, technically.
So he's 1,000 years into the future.
Okay.
And we see a cityscape here. It looks all futuristic. There's flying vehicles and stuff like that.
But he's technically been gone from this time.
For a month.
For 1 year.
One night turns. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep.
One day your time, Scott, 1 year mine.
Right.
So he was in the past for a year. But only for a day.
Yep.
In the future.
Running that mission. Because he's trying, I don't really know what he's trying to do, but we do find as they do their research that Cannonball is probably one of the High Lords.
Yeah. Which we don't know what that is.
Correct. Official documents place Samuel Guthrie in the Samuel Guthrie's presence well into the 24th century. Interesting.
Do I know him?
Not yet, but you will soon.
Did you know him? So the professor is somebody from the past.
You know, my memory programming is faulty in regards to personal recollections. A part of you was but a child, Nathan, and I was a projected energy matrix.
Right.
So is this the danger room?
This is anything it needs to be for future comics.
I'm just trying to think who has a projected energy matrix. I'm going to say it's the Danger Room, but maybe it was the dead guy.
If we just apply what we know, I believe that Jean and Cyclops sent him into the future, and Jean projected some thoughts.
He names his robots after the old X-Men.
Right.
But the professor, and I don't think this is Professor X.
You don't?
No.
I think it is.
I think he named it the professor after Professor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't think it's actually the professor, but it could be Cerebro. It could be the Danger Room.
It is somebody.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I thought maybe Cerebro, maybe Warlock.
Oh, sure. Could be, like I said, I stop reading comics here, but this is setting seeds for anything that it needs to set seeds for. There will be a series at some point called Phoenix and Cyclops, or Cyclops and Phoenix, in which I think they cover a lot of this. So I bet you this ties into this indirectly.
I wonder if this is a thread that we ever get the end of.
I bet you we do.
Okay.
Anyways, neat stuff in, as far as that goes. I mean, you know, up until this, all we knew is that his name was Nate for some reason, or Nathan. Yeah. We knew he had body slides. We also knew. I mean, this is doing a good job of tying in some of the old man conversation of him being around for a while and the GW bridge and all that. Explains why we haven't really seen him, right? If he's been there all along, X-Men would have picked him up, X-Factor, etc. But if he's just time sliding back and forth to run these little missions.
So I feel like he was not a time traveler until Fabian Nicieza came along, but I wonder who.
Oh, I agree. 100%.
Idea it was. Was it Fabian's or was it Rob Liefeld was like, hey, do you think we could make Cable a time traveler?
I'm going to bet, and I have no evidence.
Fabian come in and say, hey, what if we made Cable a time traveler?
I'm going to bet that, because when we first see Cable, he just shows up and he's like, hey, everybody, I'm Cable and I'm going to change your world. And he's like, yeah, I've been around forever. Nick Fury knows him. All these people just know him. And we're like, oh, what? So I feel like Fabian Nicieza looked at all of those pieces and was like, you know what? I bet he's a time traveler. And you know what else? He's going to have a connection to the X-Men.
Yeah. I think you're right, but I honestly don't know.
Because, you know, I don't want to throw too much shade at Rob Liefeld, but I don't think he ever thought anything through. I think he just drew stuff. He's like, this is awesome.
Yeah. Agree with that. Although this whole High Lord thing feels like a Rob Liefeld thing.
I don't know. Remember you have the 12 that they talked about for a while, and then, yeah. You know, I think that comes back at some point. I think High Lord is just another thing, and I'm sure we're going to see High Lord in some page, somewhere, sometime in the future.
So, High Lords, all we know is that High Lords are important, and Cable feels like he needs to go back to teach the boy to be a man.
Right. So this is going to explain why did he go back in time? Why did he hook up with the New Mutants? And why has he been hanging out with them ever since? Except the problem is Sauron has killed Cannonball.
Hold on. Before we get there, Cable says, I'm going back into the past again. Time slide me before Guthrie's awakening. Mm. Give me 6 months to a year in advance, which is a huge gap.
Yeah.
So it was, oh, man, I shouldn't have said 6 months to a year. He gave me a full year. What am I going to do for the next 6 months?
Right.
Be advised in this timeline that you have made several enemies, just the way I like it.
Wouldn't he know that?
I would think so. The mutant population is on the verge of a civil war. Someone has to win that war, right? It might as well be me. The boy, High Lord, wish me luck, Professor. It's time for Sam Guthrie to wake up. And then we cut back to Sauron having killed Guthrie.
Sam, come on, please. Wake up, Sam, says Boom Boom. Dead is dead, Memo. You expect Guthrie to stand up and act as if everything was well? Fool.
Maybe so. Maybe that's what I've been all along. But Sam isn't the only one who's going to pay for my stupidity, Sauron. Blam.
So,
his gun.
Cable's gun just killed.
Probably.
Sauron-ish. And then we get a couple of Rob Liefeld Cable pinups and the issue's over.
I love these pinups because they look sort of the same.
Yep.
They're very different dynamic pictures, but they still look the same.
Somehow. So anyways, I think Mike Mignola saved that issue. Otherwise, it would have been just a bunch of dumb fighting. I believe, and I don't recall, I don't think Rob Liefeld's completely done. I think he has got like one more issue in him, but maybe I'm wrong.
He might only have framing sequences.
It could be. You might be right. I don't remember.
Still on the covers. But I think definitely by issue 13, because 13 is the last issue I bought of X-Force, and he's definitely off of it by then.
Yeah. That takes us to What If number 6. Boy, this was a rough read.
What if the X-Men lost Inferno?
Neat concept. Very neat concept.
Not a lot of X-Men in this issue, surprise. Nope. we do have on the cover, we have Wolverine demonic Wolverine, as we saw in the pages of Inferno, and Kitty Pryde.
Yeah.
And those are really the Rachel also appears. And I think that's it for the X-Men.
Yeah, the way the issue is set up is really weird because they open up the thing and they do three pages on this is what could have happened. And then they show the outcome of what happened. And then the Watcher comes in and then basically retells us the what ifs. So it's like we get the same sequence a couple of times leading to Sim. So Niath Streets or whatever his name is, he's dead. So it's Sim and Madeline Pryor are still alive. Inferno's happened. They sacrifice the baby and they take Wolverine. They're about to kill him, but instead of killing him, they're like, let's hold on to him as a pet. And the point for Wolverine there is the more evil things, like they feed him a baby at one point and he eats it off panel, but it's still, and they sacrifice a baby almost on panel.
Christopher Summers.
Yeah.
Nathan Christopher Summers Cable.
Yeah. I mean, you see the baby in three panels, they lay the baby down and then Sim stabs the baby. Now that's off panel, but it's like, this is dark stuff here that we're dealing with.
That's what ifs. They go pretty dark places.
So, and then, like I said, a baby is fed to Wolverine, and the comment there is the more evil things we get him to do, the more that he falls. And then we cut over to essentially a Doctor Strange and Baron Mordo's story about who, well, they're trying to betray each other. Well, Baron Mordo is betraying Doctor Strange. Sim is going to betray Madeline, and Madeline's probably going to betray Sim. That's the majority of the story.
A couple of times the bad guys find the good guys, and the bad guys are made up of former good guys, and they fight and they escape and people die.
Rachel's kind of the key to this whole thing, and as did happen in the pages of Inferno, she is turned into a wedding bride mannequin, but Doctor Strange senses this and uses magic to bring her back, so she becomes a factor in trying to resolve. The world is taken over by Inferno. People are dying. People are enslaved. It's a bad situation.
It's a bad time to be in Manhattan.
By the way, Alicia Storm?
Yep.
Yeah, she's pregnant, but she's been captured by the demons and held prisoner, probably for food. We don't know.
We don't learn that she's pregnant until the last page.
Oh, we don't?
Yeah.
I thought it opened up with...
Did it?
I thought the first...
I know she's in the first page, but does she say that she's pregnant?
I thought it...
Like they would just eat her right away.
Did. Maybe it didn't. Among the captives, Alicia Storm, wife of the hero known as the Torch, but it is not known... It is not the doomed blind woman whose fate this moment concerns. Oh, you're right. We don't find out she's pregnant until the end. You're right. Spoilers.
Interestingly, in the real world... Alicia Silverstone turns out... Alicia Storm turns out to be a Skrull. So the people who wrote this did not know that yet.
No, it's what if, so it doesn't matter.
They also didn't know about Wolverine's bones, which we'll get to.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Doctor Strange uncovers Phoenix from the statue, brings her aboard, says Phoenix is the key to saving all of this.
On a couple of occasions, Kitty comments of like, I'm just here. Like, all I can do is phase. Like, all these people have magic and superpowers, and I'm just kind of here staying out of the way.
There's some sort of tribunal on the way to Earth who's like a...
Well, it's the Living Tribunal.
Tribunal who's going to probably destroy the Earth if it discovers that it's filled with demons.
Right.
So they want to get rid of the demons before that happens.
And Doctor Strange predicts that, like, hey, if we can, you know... They come up with this plan where, like, we just have to destroy all of the demons. And Kitty's like, well, what about the humans that were turned into demons? This isn't their fault. So there's a little debate there. But Doctor Strange is like, I think that's a risk we got to take. We just got to destroy all of them and give whatever's left a chance to start this whole thing over again. And the Living Tribunal will presumably help with that.
The Phoenix Force is not in Rachel. She has to commune with space and Doctor Strange in order to find it. And she ends up finding it in space and then it comes back to Earth.
So that's what was confusing me in that Excalibur issue. I thought that the Phoenix was in space for Excalibur.
Yeah, I thought something like that.
Yeah. So I stand corrected.
Madeline also detects that the Phoenix Force is coming and she's like, well, I'm going to I'm gonna take advantage of this too, because I also had the Phoenix Force, I guess.
She has an affinity for it, at least, is what she says.
Wolverine accidentally kills, well, Kitty approaches Wolverine because I think Wolverine's sneaking up on Doctor Strange.
Yep.
And so Wolverine turns and kills Kitty, and Kitty says, "Logan."
So this is basically the hero's last stand. Like, Human Torch has fallen. Thor's dead. Thor sacrificed. So it's basically Doctor Strange is holding everything back with his magic, and these heroes are being picked off left and right.
And Baron Mordo betrays everybody.
Yep. And Kitty, you know, as I mentioned, has not been a factor until she shows up to try to knock Wolverine out of the way so that he doesn't kill Doctor Strange. But then Wolverine kills Kitty.
With her eyes wide open, locking her former friend in a stare from which he cannot look away, Kitty Pryde dies.
Logan, why? Yes, and Baron Mordo betrays Doctor Strange, and then Wolverine freaks out. He's like, "Kitty's dead. All that was good in me is dead." And so he stabs Baron Mordo through the chest, killing him.
And then Baron Mordo tears off all of his skin, leaving only the skeleton, which in this world is just I guess it could go either way. Like, what would, if you ripped off all of Wolverine's flesh and his skeleton was bonded with adamantium, I guess it would look like this.
Probably.
So this kind of tracks, I guess.
Yeah.
Not that it matters.
No, it doesn't. No, says Rachel. And Kitty, too. Madeline has the Phoenix Force now, and she's like, "It's all mine."
But then Sim, who has been, I think he was killed earlier.
He was, yeah. So
the skeleton of Wolverine and stabs Madeline in the back, betraying her. To betray the betrayer, it says, so she must have killed him earlier. Yeah.
And now Sim, with Wolverine's skeleton, has Ilyana's soul sword, and he's coming for Rachel.
And Rachel's going to face him, but then Doctor Strange says, no, don't worry about that. Do what you're supposed to do. Wipe out all of the demons, like we planned. And so she does, and then Phoenix leaves.
Yes, she calls the Phoenix Force down. The Phoenix engulfs the earth and, I guess, sizzles out all the demons, including the innocent people that were turned into demons, but not the humans. The Living Tribunal is there.
He's like on his way, and the Phoenix is like, "Hey, don't worry, bro." And he's like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, so he kind of holds the Phoenix Force in his hands, and they probably have like a little mental conversation. He sets it free, and I think the Living Tribunal restores the earth to basically just, you know, grass and mountains and stuff, because the last panel is a bunch of people with spears and loincloths in the mountains, and he's like, "This used to be Manhattan."
Even the Tribunal cannot discern why the Phoenix did what it did today. Mm-hmm. Was it in some small way to atone for the 5 billion of debauchery? Or was it just a cosmic whim? The Tribunal, and perhaps even the Phoenix, will never know. And now, with crisis averted, they part.
And so you've got Doctor Strange, Rachel, and Alicia Storm.
Has a cave.
They have a baby.
"I love you, baby."
So rebirth, right? Everything, I mean, these people have to carry on with the legacy of what has happened with the Inferno, but the new generation can come and rebuild this earth in a better image, hopefully.
And the Marvel Universe, like in our world, the comics would be, there would be only one comic, and it would just be Rachel and Doctor Strange.
Yep.
Featuring baby Jonathan Storm.
Right.
He somehow would get fire powers. I don't know how.
Absolutely he would. So that takes us, I don't know. It was a bit of a slog. Neat idea, but I don't know. I didn't really care for it all that much.
It's like all what ifs. So they hit or miss at certain points. Like, some interesting ideas, but ultimately, I don't know.
Has there ever been, and I'm sure somebody has an answer to this, but has there ever been a what if where the outcome is way better than what actually happened?
Wasn't the one that we covered where the old X-Men don't get kidnapped by Krakoa?
Yeah.
Didn't that one end up like the new X-Men were way better than the...
I don't remember how it ends, but yeah, they they don't have the problems that the new team had because they're all on the same page because they've been working with each other forever.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But anyways, we get to cover everything in Marvel Comics Presents number 89.
Yeah, because like everything... We got a Wolverine story by Peter David and Sam Keith. We got a Beast story by Scott Lobdell and Jay Lee. We got a Spitfire story featuring Celine with Dan Slott and Rita Fagiani. We got a Mojo story also by Dan Slott and Joe Madureira. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Wolverine story is great. Continues to be, the art is fantastic. Not a whole lot happens, but Cyber has left Tiger. Some other creatures have shown up.
Wolves
have shown up, and
a cat.
So Tiger's like, what's going on? And then we flip over to Cyber and Wolverine still fighting within Wolverine's little drug.
It's a crazy flashback.
And it's kind of neat. Like, you see this awesome full page panel of the two of them coming to each other with their little fingertip knives and Wolverine's claws, and they're coming at each other, and you're just looking forward to an awesome battle. And you turn the page, and it's one like wide frame of them just doing sort of a Looney Tunes esque slice, slice, chop, 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 snick, 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 hack, 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 hack. And then it pauses for a moment, and then Wolverine starts sliding apart. It's awesome. Love it. It's great.
So in Looney Tunes, you would see like a big cloud, and then hands and paws and whatever would fly out of the cloud occasionally to show this action.
This is essentially the comic book representation of that.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. They just put all of the sound effects in the middle.
Yep.
And so we imagine that, you know, whatever happened in the middle was where all the sound effects.
Well, and you see like circles where their legs are. So I'm just imagining like their legs are just spinning around just like you would in a Looney Tunes cartoon.
It's very Roadrunner-esque, yeah.
Yeah. Wolverine falls apart. Cyber's like, ha ha ha, it's been surreal. And then we finally cut out of the dream sequence. And Wolverine, I think his healing factor is kicking in. He's like, not finished. Tiger's like, Logan, oh Lord. All of these, your friends brought me to you.
So I guess the wolf and the cat, she followed them to where Wolverine was.
And I just love, I don't know, there's a claustrophobic feeling about all of this because it's just the way the colors are used here, the way the shadowing is used here. It is very, I would say it's very dreamlike.
Yeah.
And
Wolverine's cowl is ridiculous.
Yeah. And he sniffs Tiger and is like, you were with him. You were with Cyber. He had you just like he had her, referring to the lady in his dreams. And he's getting ready to, oh, I don't know, kill her maybe, or just be angry that he can't ever have anything to his own. Nothing's mine.
Not my woman. Not my mind. I'll kill you.
And she's like, shut up.
Yeah. If you think I would let that creature defile me, if that's your opinion of me, then go ahead. He says. And then in a very, I don't know, touching frame, he's on his knees, kind of holding her like, I made a mistake. Will you ever forgive me?
I almost killed you. Ran into the one guy in the world who gives me the creeps. Tough day at the office.
Just that I got an almost fatal belly wound. Tough day at the office. Tell me about it later. And that's when we flip over to General Coy.
So the drugs that Cyber sold to Tiger, he also sold to General Coy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all part of Cyber's plan. Yeah. Have you factored in that their disapproval might take a severe form?
Factored it in, my dear General. I'm counting on it.
Click. Continued next issue. So, again, not a whole lot happens, but it's still a good chapter.
The artwork is... makes it worth it.
Oh, yeah.
If there isn't much going on. Like, normally this would be a thing that we would complain about because
yes,
it's a middle of a story. It doesn't really go anywhere. But because of the artwork.
Yes. And again, young me looked at that and was like, this is bad. This is bad artwork. But he was wrong. That young me was a very wrong, judgy person.
Would you go back in time and like slap yourself and be like, hey, this is good.
You should look at this. Like, really look at what's happened. And I've been like, no, this is not Jim Lee. Me.
That's your own stupid time. I bet it sucks in 20.
The Beast story was a slog. This is one of those middle chapters where...
It's not a thing that Rob Liefeld has abandoned. Remember, oh, he on this?
Was he arting on this?
He was the artist for the first few chapters.
I forgot. I don't know. This one feels like it's just been going on. Like, it started out with pretty good, but...
Two parts too long.
Oh, my gosh. We're on part 5 of 8, so...
So Beast teams up with the Constrictor in order to figure out what's going on, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, who's the ape guy? The Gorilla Master? What's his name?
We never remember.
Yeah, he's on life support or something like that, and he wants his creatures to come with him. You get some predators that are wandering around, and yeah, Beast and...
That's strange.
Beast and Constrictor fight them.
The guy that Beast was on the plane with is also running around with a gun.
Yep. So he's involved.
The Beast finds Jennifer, Dr. Niles, and she says, "I have a vague recollection that I owe you something," and then shoots him.
Is that a gun? What are you? Blam! Ung! Continued next issue.
So she doesn't remember him from their childhood, but she shoots him.
The Celine story's kind of fun. She's woken up with a man that she's been with, and then...
So I like how they do this. We cut to a panel where we just see Celine in bed.
Smoking a cigarette, and we see smoke off to the side.
Off to the side of her.
Yep.
And eventually we find out that it's a completely dissolved body that she just smoked.
Now, in character, I knew that that's exactly what had happened.
Yeah.
And she calls up one of the Hellfire goons and it's like, "Come here, I need..." And he's like, "Oh my God, am I next?"
"Mistress, you called?"
And so she's watching TV and she sees that there is a woman whose name is Spitfire, who I guess we saw or somebody saw in the pages of Namor number 12, who received a blood transfusion from the original android Human Torch, and she now has speedster powers. And part of that, she's super old, but she only looks like she's like, you know, I don't know, 60 or 50, something like that.
Yeah, I think the blood transfusion caused her to de-age.
I think age slower, maybe.
She looks a lot younger. Like, she's obviously the same.
Oh, maybe you're right, yeah.
There's a side-by-side of her looking fairly old. And then,
yeah, you're right.
She says, "My body has revived biologically back 48 years.
Yeah.
So her body is 48 years younger.
Yeah.
Celine is, of course, very interested in this because she wants to live forever. She figures, "Oh, if I absorb this lady, maybe I can get her her secrets to de-aging." So she kidnaps this kid's, this woman's son, who there's a subplot of him trying to set her up with a bartender, which is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the main story, Spitfire goes after Celine. They confront each other. They do a lot of talking. And Spitfire, see, her son is attached to some sort of explosion device, and she has to be just fast enough to survive, get him off of it. And she punches Celine and says, "Not ready, well, likely." Is bloody like a swear word that they can't use in comics?
I don't know. I feel like ruddy is a dialect or maybe a different region. They can say bloody.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah. Or maybe somebody's just trying to be cute. Of like, "Ooh, you know what would sound even more British than bloody? Ruddy." I don't know.
Well, Spitfire rescues her son. Celine leaves and maybe will. She says, "She's seen enough. Let's go."
Yeah, sort of seems like maybe they're trying to set up like a, you know, nemesis story of like, "Oh, Blair, Celine will be back for this Spitfire person." But the front portion of this comic is way better than the middle and the end, in my opinion. I was like, "Oh, this could be interesting." And then it just like going and going. I was like, "Oh my God, it's never going to end." But the son's okay. She rescues him. They end up going to the bar and they have a glass of wine and maybe they'll go out on a date.
Well, with the bartender, not with her son.
Well, you don't know.
Then we get a Mojo story, which has some pretty solid art. Kind of Art Adams-esque.
I think it's whoever you said doing his best Art Adams impersonation. And it's not bad. It's good. It's good stuff.
Joe Madureira.
Yeah.
Madureira.
And the point here is that, I don't know, Mojo's studios aren't doing all that well. He's got to find the next big thing or something.
His domos cut out portions of his newspaper that talk about how his ratings are down and that his media empire will be completely destroyed. So they opt to go film a documentary style reality show of the X-Men, but the X-Men aren't doing anything.
Yeah. It's super boring. Like, Storm is watering some plants, Beast is reading, but every now and then he hears a huge noise. And it's like, oh, there's Colossus and Cyclops. They're just taking down a tree. Oh, I hear Wolverine's claws. Oh, he's just slicing up celery.
Then there's a danger room session and they're like, yes, this is more like it. And we get a full page spread, which is pretty good, of just a big old danger room session, all of the X-Men in it and Ghost Mojo in the background. And then when we cut back to him having done his documentary, it turns out that Mojo didn't know how to work the camera and was just pointing at it himself the whole time.
Yep.
And he says, do you have the footage? And they're like, well, there's a problem with the footage. And he's like, well, run it anyway. Run it now. And then we get the next panel where Mojo face show number one. So they're back in business.
It's an unbridled success.
Yeah. And so they're filming more of the Mojo face show. Spiral and a bunch of
domos
are smacking Mojo on the head and body, and they're just recording his facial expression. Come on, people. I want a wide range of facial expressions here. Smash those mallets down with feeling. Take it from the top.
Ah, showbiz, says Mojo as he gets clomped on the head twice.
It's fun. It's silly.
It's fun and it's silly. And that's all I have to say about that story.
And we got Namor 24, which very quickly cut to the middle of the issue where Namor breaks into a facility that has some luscious plant growth on it and gets attacked by a brainwashed Wolverine who has a plant stem out growing out of his back. So he's being mind controlled. They fight a little bit. Namor eventually hits him with a tree, which is kind of cool. And then Plant Man shows up. Remember Plant Man?
I do remember Plant Man.
And he's got a new costume, which is like a trench coat and just a handkerchief and a cowboy hat. It's all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
And we get like a full kind of backstory of Plant Man that sort of ties in with what's going on with Namor. But the cool part is that we get to see various incarnations of Plant Man's costume. And that's cool. Mm-hmm. We get to see the one we're familiar with, which was terrible. Mm-hmm. The one after that, which is terrible, kind of terrible. Even the current one's terrible, but that's really it. Namor gets attacked by plant monsters or plant creatures.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to be reading the next issue because I feel like Wolverine is still stuck in a trance and has to get out of that.
They kind of like after that initial reveal of Wolverine, he's not really in it much after that. It's mostly just the Plant Man story.
Yeah, they fight and he's gone.
Yeah.
Fight for maybe 3 pages. You know, if you like Namor and you like Wolverine, you're probably like, yeah, this was awesome.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all we got for this week. Unless you got anything else.
Gosh, no.
Okay, well.
Gosh, no. No more comics. No more comics.
This was our last episode.
We had a letter.
Oh, did we?
We did. Put that in there. All right, this one comes from Mike. And Mike says, gentlemen, thank you for your podcast. I picked up somewhere in the middle and have enjoyed your commentary over the years. Even the comments that had me trying to project my thoughts across space and time to correct you. Well, that's going to be often.
I imagine that's common.
Yeah, every episode probably. In all seriousness, I do enjoy the off-the-cuff style of the podcast. I also appreciate your attempt to avoid too much political discussion of profanity. That's an achievement in our modern climate. Keep up the good work. And we've talked about it in the past. We never planned it out, but I, from episode one, made a conscious decision that I was not going to be profane. I love swearing. I really love it.
It's fun.
The problem is, in scenarios where, because as he mentions, we're off the cuff. And I think really what that means is like, we kind of read the issues. Nobody's taking notes. We don't have a big diagram connecting all these plot points. We don't have factoids ready about all these creators and other things. We just kind of read the issues and talk about what they are. It could be a crutch when we're sort of struggling to put pieces together to just start swearing and just kind of rely on that as the thing. On the other hand, if we were super together and had all of those notes, I don't think, you know, injecting a bunch of profanity would be a crutch. I think it could actually be kind of funny, but that's just not going to happen. That's at least my take on profanity within our podcast. Plus, it's comic books. I mean, these are comics back then, and
exactly, yeah,
you know, they're targeted towards a younger audience, and in a way we should be taking ourselves back to our younger selves as we're reading these. And you know,
modern day comic books don't really have a lot of swearing. I think they just made a choice of like, then we're not going to do that.
Well, comics code and all that sort of stuff, but
well, even after, I'm saying like after, oh, the sure, comics code, like sometimes they'll inject a asterisk, exclamation mark,
sure,
at sign. But other than that, like, you know, they don't really do it. And, you know, I think I'm guilty of having dropped an F-bomb here.
It has happened, I think, on both of ours. But it is minuscule. Less than 1% of our episodes contain any sort of filth.
Yeah.
And then in political discussion, I mean, I think we've been clear on where we lie on those types of things, but I don't know that it would be very valuable to discuss presidential elections while we're talking about Cyber and Wolverine fighting each other in a dream sequence.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And not only that, but I don't feel like I'm understand the issues well enough to sound intelligent talking about them. I already sound unintelligent enough talking about comic books. So
exactly. So. But I mean, I think, well, yeah, I don't know. I think one could attempt, if they were trying to be smart, or if they were smarter, to draw parallels between stories and maybe the politics at the time, or maybe even make parallels to today's politics. But
I think the closest we've ever got to that is, I'll say something like, and that mirrors what's going on today.
Right. So take those how you want. I think you know where we lie, but yeah, we're not that smart.
And that's
what I have to say about that.
Moral of the show is that we're not that smart. So thanks, Mike. Thanks for writing. Thanks for listening.
And if you'd like to get a hold of us, you can do so by visiting us at www.xmenpodcast.com, facebook.com/dangerroompodcast. At Danger Room Go on X, dangerroom@xmenpodcast.com is our email address. Go out to iTunes, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, to subscribe and leave stars or feedback or what have you. It's been a while, actually, since we've checked our iTunes feedback profile, so maybe it's just loaded with positive comments and we just haven't gotten around to them, or not, right? The other possibility. Go out to patreon.com/dangerroom for more stuff. Such as, what is it? X-Men Forever? All new X-Men? X-Men Unlimited?
Where is our Patreon exclusive show? And
what are we covering right now, though?
What issue?
No, what series?
X-Men Forever.
Oh, thank you. I get all those confused. X-Men Forever. What would have happened if Chris Claremont would have continued writing after X-Men number 3? Plus, no political hot takes, but definitely hot takes on shows, G.I. Joe, Transformers, movies.
Pretty much the same five shows or things that we grew up with in the 80s on repeat. And then also Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And our theme music is provided by Laszlo Hollyfeld, and that'll about do it. Adam, do you have anything else?
There was also, if you go back through the archives of the Patreon exclusive episodes, we have episodes that discuss the now fairly old of the X-Men.
Right.
The Jonathan Hickman run of the Krakoa X-Men up to a certain point.
Up to a certain point, and we maybe one day we'll get back to that, because I believe that story has concluded. I don't know where everything is in the Marvel Universe right now, and frankly, I'm not going to look. I want to be surprised.
It might be fun to go back and just finish up that Krakoa storyline, because I guess maybe it's over now. I don't know. I'm not actually sure. We'll cover the highlights.
Well, since Siri has been listening to me this entire podcast, I'm sure my Facebook profile will be just littered with whatever's happening in the Marvel universe. So in some way, somehow, it's going to be spoiled. Not that I really care all that much, but...
I saw some snarky comments on X. It feels better to say Twitter.
I know, but it's not Twitter anymore. It's X.
I saw some snarky comments on X, and I didn't really understand them, but it gave me the impression that it was either wrapping up or it was already over.
Yeah, I had the same impression. It's over, and maybe people aren't happy with what they're doing now. But again, that was
reading comics not happy? What?
Crazy.
People on the internet not happy? People on X Twitter not happy?
These are all good points, Adam. If you have a pamphlet, I would like to take a peek at it.
What?
I don't know. Anyways, if you, anything else, Adam?
I'm going to go drink some Kool-Aid.
Do it.
I literally am going to go drink some Kool-Aid. They sell it in like these big powder kegs now.
Okay.
So I have like a big powder box of Kool-Aid. Fruit punch. It's really good, but it's probably terrible for me and my teeth. I got nothing else.
Just rinse your mouth out with some water when you're done and everything.
Yeah, you've got to make sure to wash out and maybe even go brush your teeth if you're feeling pretty bad. But
yeah. Well, until next time, my name's Jeremy.
My name's Adam.
And the Danger Room is closed.